Support for The Front Porch comes from WVCarFinder.com, matching West Virginia cars to West Virginians who want to buy them. It's a service of the Charleston Gazette-Mail. More at WVCarFinder.com. And you're on The Front Porch. This week, we're going to talk about the transgender rights movement. Transgender people are increasingly coming out and speaking up. How are we going to respond? And finally, am I being too hard on Rick Wilson? We hear from you, our listeners. Joining me is Rick Wilson, goat herder, hillbilly philosopher, proud liberal from the American Friends Service Committee. Hey, Rick.
Hey there.
And Lori Lynn, lawyer, mother of three boys, and conservative columnist who tweets at WV Pundit. Hey, Lori.
Hi.
Let's start with some breaking news, though. The Front Porch podcast has won second place in the Associated Press Broadcasters Association Awards of the Virginias. That's all of Virginia and West Virginia. We were beat, though, by somebody.
Yeah, they're going down next time, let me just say.
Can I tell you who it is? Yeah. This guy's name is Chris Core, C-O-R-E, from WTOP in Virginia. And he has this thing, editorial type thing, called Core Values. Get it? His name is Core. They're Core Values. And let me just say that I do think we were robbed.
Yeah, we were. It was rigged. Fingers on the scales.
So, Chris Core, if you're listening, we're coming for you next year.
The harder they come, the harder they fall.
No, but Lori, you as a other Virginian by birth, right, you know this guy.
Well, I know of him. Yeah, he's a real big fish. I don't know if we really want to draw his ire here, guys. I think we maybe need to rethink this.
So I'm not scared of you, Chris
Core.
To
me, it is an honor to come in second to you, Chris Core. I'm not trying to pick a fight here, but...
Are you angling to get on his program? That's what it sounds like to me, Lori. So anyway, Chris Core, watch out. Rick and I, at least, are coming after you.
There's one more thing we have to get to here. I understand. I saw, like, pictures. Like, a bunch of y'all went to this award thing. I don't recall getting the invitation.
Yeah, really.
Did you,
where's our
Lori,
statuette,
did you get
Scott?
When like you dinner, probably
it
wine
was a nice
dine.
Email, wasn't it?
Right? Yeah, it was really nice, apparently.
When we win first place, I will take all of us to the award ceremony. All right, so we're going to tackle transgender rights. And speaking of Virginia, we are going to talk a little bit about a case in Virginia about a transgender boy, right, who brought a case about which bathroom to use. And that has an effect on us because it's the same court that we're in the federal system. And then other issues coming up about transgender people here in West Virginia. So, Lori, could you talk a little bit about this case? What do you know about the Fourth Circuit case involving this young man?
So this is Gloucester County, Virginia. There was a transgender boy, which, just to be clear on the terminology, that means a person who is born genetically female and is now presenting as a boy, but he had sued for the right to use the boys' restroom. The school had tried to accommodate him by giving him access, or giving all students really access to one stall bathroom, so the unisex bathrooms. But he had said that he felt singled out by that. He wanted access to the restroom that he felt, you know, was his gender identity. And the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, 3-judge panel, 2-1, there was a dissent, held that Title IX, which is the gender access and education law, requires that he be given access to the boys' restroom.
So, Lori, what does this case mean for West Virginia then?
Well, West Virginia is in the Fourth Circuit, so the law that's made by the Fourth Circuit applies to us here. It is a pretty novel interpretation of Title IX. What the court is essentially saying is that the word sex in this provision of Title IX doesn't actually mean sex in the traditional way. It means really gender identity when it comes to a bathroom, a shower. And again, we're talking about in the educational context. So this doesn't necessarily apply to, you know, for example, public parks or other public buildings.
It's interesting. There's been this whole bathroom predator scenario that's been talked about as if, you know, transgender people using the bathroom, they're going to do all kind of terrible things. And, you know, when this issue first came up, I contacted people in several different cities around the state who had non-discrimination ordinances and asked if there were transgender human wave assaults on bathrooms, and it didn't seem to be an issue. And people who've investigated it haven't found a, you know, substantiated case around the country. And
a lot of people said this is a solution looking for a problem.
Well, let me say this. There are plenty of cases of creepy people in bathrooms. It may not be arising from this transgender issue specifically, but there are plenty of cases where, you know, usually a man in a woman's bathroom, you know, sticking a cell phone under the stall, things like that.
And I guess the case here would be if you are a creepy person, a man wanting to creep out people in the women's bathroom, I guess what, I could say I'm transgender, walk in there and hang out, and there's nothing you could do about it. It seems like there would be ways of dealing with that. But it does seem like the larger issue here, though, is that something that we thought was settled. We thought that it was just simple. You're assigned a sex at birth, and that's what you were, and that's the bathroom you went into, and that's what you were called, and it's over and done with. You know, my daughter is a seventh grader, and she just did a project for school with a friend of hers about transgender rights and all the different spectrum of gender identities. I kind of feel like my grandma, when I used to talk to my grandma about interracial marriage, she kind of knew it was morally right, but she couldn't get her mind around it being okay. It was just so foreign to her. And I feel like our society is having the same sort of reaction to transgender rights.
You know, there's a theory in social science that's called structuralism. But the simple version is the human mind is like a tackle box, you know, and we like to categorize things in the tackle box. And everybody has a tackle box, but they put stuff in different directions. And a lot of it's around binary oppositions and stuff. And so people often, you know, may freak when they find something that doesn't quite fit in the binary case. And I think some people are just cynically trying to cash in on this as a bogus culture war.
When it comes to manipulation, you know, about things that rarely happen, I would just say that, you know, I agree that this is not the most burning issue in terms of practicalities, but you look at the debate we just had on RFRA. No RFRA has been used ever in the history of RFRAs to successfully deny rights to any gay person. And yet here we had this, you know, full-on freak out. Again, I'm not, you know, taking a position on it one way or the other over a hypothetical.
It seems like the legal fight and the political fight is really more about the overall cultural fight. Does the society say we are going to accept transgender people? We're going to accept gay marriage. We're going to accept all of this. And people who don't agree with it, they can disagree, but they're going to be basically social and economic pariahs.
Well, the
other
option,
that's the debate.
The other option is, you know, you don't, if you're against same-sex marriage, you might either want to not marry at all or marry someone from the opposite sex.
Well, but I think what the people who are for same-sex marriage really want eventually, Rick, is to make it so that opposition, personal opposition to same-sex marriage is very similar to personal opposition to interracial marriage. In other words, it's just not socially acceptable in America. You can believe it all you want to, but there's going to be a high social cost for expressing that belief.
And I think you're right, and I think we'll get there. You know, I think we will get to that place where you're not, you know, it's not a socially acceptable opinion to express. But the issue that I find so interesting is the speed that we're going with this issue, because, you know, if you look at President Obama in as recently as I think 2011, before he ran for re-election, he was expressing the view that, you know, I think marriage is between a man and a woman and God's in the mix. That view now is cited as a hateful view, and it's the view that the current Democrat, now, you know, nobody thinks he actually believed that at the time, but the point is he said it, and he said it for a reason, which was, you know, to reassure people that he wanted to vote for him. And that was just, what, 5 years ago? So it's interesting that, and I think the speed of it has been much faster than it was with, for example, the interracial marriage, as you were talking about.
I think I never would have expected that marriage equality would come before INDA. You know, I always thought non-discrimination would come first. If someone would have told me they thought this would happen first, I'd tell them they're crazy, you know, politically, but that's the way things are sometimes with courts. I mean, I'm concerned about economics, about people getting a living wage. I'm not really into the whole culture war thing. I think most of those are just distractions. But It is. I will agree that this is something that's happened really quickly. And it is, regardless of where you're looking at. Like, I had the experience of meeting a woman that I taught karate to when he was a little boy, and it was kind of strange. We had this great reunion and stuff.
And I think it's one of those things where as you meet more people, you know, we have a family friend who went through the transition recently and became a woman. It was a very difficult thing for her family. Actually, there's a Us and Them podcast episode. Us and Them is one of our shows called Femme Voice, where you can listen to Anne, is her name, and the changes that she's gone through. It's not simple. You know, just to say that we should all wake up tomorrow and be okay with it, it's not realistic. We're going to have to struggle through it. We're going to have to talk about it. And it's going to be a painful transition for society to figure this stuff out. What used to be very clear is no longer clear, and that's gender identity.
I think probably all along there have been some transgender people using bathrooms. And the other, like, if you really think it through, to set up a law like this, you'd need to establish, like, the crotch police who would look at your genitals and your birth certificate and make sure that they would match, you know. And that might be a good jobs program, but I think it might be problematic on other areas.
Politically, this was tied in a little bit with the Religious Freedom Restoration Act that was debated in the legislature that ended up dying in the Senate but passing in the House. And now it's become this huge deal in a primary dealing with our Senate Majority Leader, which is Senator Carmichael of Jackson County. And he's being challenged in what's kind of a test case to whether the Republican Party will stick with him and his vote helping to lead to the end of RFRA.
He gave a really emotional speech on the floor about it. And so he was definitely seen as kind of the Republican who went against it, although there were others.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a test case for the Republican Party and whether or not someone who stands up and stands up for these rights is going to be taken down.
Here's my final take on this. You know, it's like, all right, let's all just take a deep breath and pee. It's going to be okay. We got bigger issues to deal with.
Now I got to look up whether you can say pee on the
micturate.
Radio.
Micturate. Just take a deep breath and micturate and move on.
No, I do want to say one more thing, which is there's a big debate within feminism about this. Really interesting perspectives on, you know, is a man becoming a woman just another kind of male privilege? And the whole Caitlyn Jenner reaction was really interesting. There are some feminists who really complain that, you know, Caitlyn Jenner gets all this attention and the way that she was presented herself was as this bombshell, this really sultry, you know, to be a woman, to become a woman involves, you know, lacing up in a corset on the front of Vanity Fair. And, you know, people joke about it. She was named Woman of the Year. And, you know, some people said, and I think there's a little bit of truth to this, you know, the Woman of the Year is a white Republican man. You know, what does that say? And there's some women that complain about in certain circles you're not allowed to talk about breastfeeding, childbirth, even having abortions as a female thing. I think there was a controversy in Texas. A pro-abortion rights group actually changed its name from, you know, something something women, because the idea was, well, women have abortions too. In some circles, you're not allowed to say vagina because, you know, trans women don't have vagina.
I'm rolling my eyes a little bit.
Sighing heavily.
It's like, I hate to be retrograde, but man, it wears me out. Here's the other thing. Frontline did a really good special on young people, children, basically, mm-hmm. who are coming out at very young ages and saying, you know what, I was born a boy, but I'm really a girl, and how parents deal with that. On one hand, there's some evidence that if parents deal well with that, that the children end up with having a much healthier life. And you can make decisions, by the way, at a young age as far as hormone therapies and things mm-hmm. like that, that can set a child on a certain path toward either maleness or femaleness. That just shows how old-fashioned I am in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, I would encourage people not to sign a contract too soon, you know.
But the problem is, hormonally, you know, the earlier you start, the more effective the hormone therapies will be if you are actually going to transition. But you're also asking people to make permanent life-altering decisions at a really young age.
Yeah. I think, you know, it used to be you would say there's sex and gender, and sex is biological, and gender is the socially constructed part of it, or that sex is your hardware and gender is the software, although said that once in a sociology class, and Beavis and Butthead started cracking up in the back. I had to rephrase a little bit. But I think, you know, just like there are people who are born with physical conditions where their bodies function differently, I think transgender people who actually feel like somewhere along the way there was a paperwork error and they're not gay, they're not lesbian, they're actually, you know, fundamentally of that, and they happen to be born a certain way. And that's something that really, it does freak people out.
Well, could it be more of a spectrum? I mean, the way we're talking about it is still like it's either or. It was like, okay, I'm born biologically male, but oops, I'm really completely a female. When it seems like the truth of it is there are all different sorts of levels.
No, and that's a really good point. I almost wish there was more of a space to say, you know, I am a girl, but I'm just a girl who is into maybe more traditionally masculine things, who presents as a little bit more traditionally masculine. It feels almost like the transgender thing is pushing people to declare, you know, what is actually kind of embracing that binary.
Yeah, can't you still be a tomboy? That's what we used to call that. But who also does not want to become a boy.
Right. Can't that be okay, too?
I think we're going to work all this stuff out over time. My daughter, for her, it is as clear and simple as saying that black people deserve equal rights.
But
to,
okay.
to her, the ambiguity that I feel about it all is just old-fashioned, and that's something the dads do, and that it's so clear that transgender people deserve full rights, and it's not even a question.
But so on the bathrooms issue, would she prefer to have just a gender-neutral bathroom that everybody uses?
I don't know if she saw it all the way through.
She's cool
But I think she's just like, you know, if someone who presents as a girl wants to go to my bathroom, cool, no problem. Why would anyone be against it? So she's lacking of even the thought that there might be another side to this issue at all. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of her friends feel the same way. In her culture, in that teen culture, that's the norm now.
Yeah.
So my daughter had this to say about it last night. She said when the court decision came down, she thought it was awesome because at public events, there's always a line in the women's bathroom, and she's going to go in there and hit a stall and the boys. Yeah. So, but that's the way she rolls. She's kind of she's been on the show.
The flip side of this is, have you ever been inside a woman's restroom? It is inevitably cleaner and nicer.
Yeah, but the urinals suck. Let me just say that.
It's true.
All right. So on that note, we'll take a break. Coming back in just a moment. Okay, so Front Porchians, did you know we have a West Virginia Public Broadcasting app?
I was not aware of that. Were you aware of that?
Yeah, I was not aware.
Really? You're not just faking it? You really don't know?
I actually really did not know.
This is awesome. Okay, great. You have what sort of phone?
An iPhone.
Here's what I want you to do. I want you to go to the App Store.
The App Store.
And if you have an Android phone,
here we are.
Then you want to go to Google Play, but in this case, the App Store. You want to search for WVPB. Like West Virginia and peanut butter.
Okay, media app. I see it.
Okay.
Oh, even Rick is figuring this out.
Loveo.
All right,
download
it, please.
I like the logo. Very nice. Get. It's free, right?
It is totally free.
So hit get. Okay.
I see news and I see podcasts as the second choice, and there's the front porch right there.
Click on the little computer screen in the middle there, and what you'll see is all of our videos. You can watch Masterpiece, you can watch Nova.
And there's a donate button right there.
Oh, and wow, I didn't even have to ask you to do that. Yes, there's a red donate now button in the upper right-hand corner as well. And then finally, there's a whole tab for Mountain Stage. You can listen to and watch all of your favorite Mountain Stage performances. Please download it and make it the way you listen to The Front Porch and all your favorite programs. Let's hit the mailbag here at The Front Porch. I received a handwritten letter.
Those are always the best.
That was really cool, actually. And I didn't get permission from this gentleman to say his name, so I'm not going to. But if he's listening, I just want to thank him. It was a really thoughtful letter. And I want to talk about some of the stuff that was brought up. His basic take was he loved the podcast, but he thought that we are too, I think, tough on Rick. And so, yeah, and too easy on you, Lori.
Okay.
So let's talk about that first. And then we can talk about the fact that we're Ivy League people, which I think is related to that, ganging up on Rick, the non-Ivy League person.
We do have secret meetings before where we do our secret Ivy League handshake. And
so do you guys have secret hand signs like Muslim presidents do? According to one of our legislators.
Yeah, well, it's the same thing. It's the same handshake.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It's been a year now of The Front Porch. Hard to believe. And, you know, I think we haven't really talked about why did we start all of this, basically, where it came from. And it came from a series of conversations that I had with you, Lori, and with you, Rick, about our desire to get opinion back on the air in West Virginia Public Broadcasting, mm-hmm. and figuring out how to do that in a way that was entertaining, that was conversational. It started with you and I just talking to each other, and then eventually we started bringing in other voices to interview, to talk with, to get different perspectives. I always saw my role as the person that convenes everybody. I do edit this show, as Rick has noted a couple of times. And so the show...
Yeah, we're totally at his mercy. We see all this cool and smart stuff, and then he just cuts it off.
It's all him.
Yeah.
And I could you know, release the raw version of it.
Usually
the raw version is twice as long, roughly, than what you hear on the podcast.
It would be like Dylan's basement tapes.
Point being... the reason we cut it down is because there's lots of evidence in the podcast world that you want a shorter show. Some of you want longer, but most of you really want shorter. And then I'm in a weird position because basically, Lori, you're brought in for your conservative viewpoints and your intelligence and all that. Rick, you're brought in for your liberal viewpoints and your intelligence and experience and all that. And you guys don't always fit into those neat categories either. We've seen that a lot. And then my role is supposed to be to get you two to bring out your opinions. Of course, I have opinions too, and I've struggled with, do I share them, do I not share them? I don't want to sit here like Charles Kuralt or something. Thank you, Lori, for your opinion.
Yes.
Rick, what is yours? I am a news robot, and I have no ideas whatsoever. It's hard for me to do that.
And keep it conversational, which is what we want.
Exactly. And so I struggle with it. And because, Rick, you're so funny, and because you...
looks aren't everything, Scott.
You really are. You're the star of the show, I have to say. And
I'm extending my hand to let him kiss the ring.
But because of that, I feel like we can give you a harder time. So I hope you don't... I don't know.
Well,
we
should
like
ask
we're picking
him,
on
like,
you.
Do you feel picked on? Really the question.
No, but I keep thinking back to an old Saturday Night Live skit where they had a point-counterpoint thing. Do you remember that with Dan Aykroyd and Jane Curtin? It's like the old Saturday Night Live, and I just wish Lori would call me an ignorant slut like Dan Aykroyd.
Was that where that was from?
You know,
like,
Jane, okay. you ignorant slut.
You know? Slut.
I just think that would be awesome.
I think we should do like the Terry Gross Saturday Night Live skit where they talk about the sweaty balls, voices, and
yeah, what is that? The delicious dish.
Yes, I've been told I have a good NPR voice.
So. You do have a good NPR voice, and the flip side of this, Lori, is do you feel like I treat you with kid gloves or, you know, in a condescending manner at all? That was another thing that's brought up by the letter. I hope not.
Not at all. I mean, you can certainly be tougher if you want. I don't feel condescended to at all by either of you, certainly.
That's kind of setting you up, isn't it? When I say, you don't feel like I condescend to you.
Oh, yeah, you say,
he's patting me on the head as he says this.
Like, Rick, can you take it or not? You can't, he asks. I think that, you know, the person might have been responding to a specific episode or two or something like that.
We had some high test conservatives on here. And this letter writer, I think, leaned more toward the liberal side of things. And so as a leader of this West Virginia Public Broadcasting organization, the most bitter, upset, angry criticism tends to come from liberal people who feel like we're not adequately presenting their point of view. It's not from conservatives. Conservatives are kind of more cynical about us.
Yeah, they just want to abolish it altogether and give us the private sector.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The surveys show that the NPR listenership in general nationwide, and I think we're about the same. Population's like, I think, self-identified 40% conservative or something like that. We're more like 30%, so it's less, but it's still there. What I'm trying to say is I'm trying to bring in different voices. And in a particular episode, if you feel like your voice isn't being represented in some way, tell us, you know, email me, sfin@wvpublic.org.
Yeah, and I would say the skew is probably not really so much liberal conservative as much as, you know, income and class. You know, I would think that the income of your listeners is probably quite a bit higher than average income in the state. And, you know, does that imply? I think we've actually done a really good job of tackling issues, you know, across the spectrum here, but
the bias is actually income, but that's, I think, a secondary issue. It's a big issue is education.
Mm-hmm.
That is just that is the huge thing, and highly educated people listen to us, and so that's and highly educated people tend to have more income, but not always.
See, what I would like to do is open up public broadcasting to the hillbilly demographic. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what, like, I think, like, at the end, if you put, like, a good headbanging clip from a song, like "Keep on Rocking in the Free World," you know, just a, or "Don't Fear the Reaper" if we need cowbell or something, you know, just to just jazz it up a little bit, you know.
That's another criticism I've gotten too, is that, you know, when we pick music for the shows, we tend to go for, like, the traditional old time music sound.
You did play a little bit of Alice Cooper for me one time.
You asked for it. I asked for it.
Oh, we can make requests.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, I'll get right on that.
Let's move.
Keep on Rocking, Neil Young.
All right. You will hear "Keep on Rocking in the Free World." Rick, what's your Bible verse for the week?
Well, I was thinking of, like, "Keep on Rocking in the Free World, West Virginia." But I guess...
Which book is that in?
Yeah, I think it's Leviticus. You know, like, going back to the transgender thing, you know, just judge not that you be not judged.
Oh, come on. Isn't there one about male and female?
Oh, there's all kinds of stuff. Yeah, you know, like, there's one that if two men are fighting and the guy's wife accidentally grabs the other one by the genitals, you should cut off her hand and stuff. There's a whole bunch of things that aren't terribly,
Old Testament, I'm guessing.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Jesus didn't get into that much detail. Wow, really? Where can we find that? What book is that in?
I'll have to look it up. Yeah, there's some
just Google it, folks.
And the part that bothers me is, like, where you would lay your hands on a goat and drive it away from the camp, and it would, like, take the sins of the group.
The scapegoat.
Yeah, scapegoat, which is, you know, not very nice to goats. In ancient Greece, they would keep people, they called them pharmakoi, and I think that's where pharmacy comes from, who would often be, you know, considered odd or disabled in some way, and they would keep them at public expense, and then when things were really bad, they would kill them or persecute mm-hmm. them or sacrifice them. And there is a thing here, there's a parallel here, that there are people who are easily marginalized that people like to go after when things get hard. Golly, wouldn't it be terrible if that happened in the country and stuff, you know?
What's that called again?
Pharmakoi. That's a plural. Pharmakos, pharmakoi.
I'll be doing some Googling around that, too. You always learn
you
something new.
You don't trust
new.
Me, Scott.
No, I do trust you.
Oh, you have little faith.
It's going to launch me. I know. That's fast. Is there some things you say that I have, like, a vague memory of in my education? But pharmakoi, that's something I've never even heard of. I think that'd be really interesting to learn more about. So
not
I'm
even
not,
at Harvard do.
That's right. Marshall University has. Been
yeah, I think what really, I got a job as a janitor at the Milton Library, and, you know, when I should have been vacuuming, I was just reading, you know, all kind of stuff. So
you were a terrible janitor.
I was a horrible janitor. Yeah, yeah.
So your fraud helped subsidize your education, because here
did.
You are.
Legit.
Thank you, Rick Wilson of the American Friends Service Committee, and Lori Lynn. And
thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.